Blog Talk Radio. Welcome all truth seekers from across the globe. This is Reverend Karen L. Heasley from the Spiritual Path Church of Newcastle, Pennsylvania, in the United States. Our Truth Seeker show covers a variety of subjects, from angels to afterlife communication, to parapsychology, to spiritualism, to near-death experiences, meditation, and a number of other truth-seeking topics. We are happy you have chosen to join us for this episode and hope you find it informative and enjoyable. Now, I want everybody to get a piece of paper and pencil and write this number down because we are definitely going to have a jam-packed show tonight. The number is 657-383-0416. I'm going to repeat that, 657-383-0416. And guess what? We even have a chat room open, so you're in luck. Our guest tonight is Maxine Mayer, a former Master of Divinity student at Harvard Divinity School. Maxine has a master's in religion from Harvard and a certificate in parapsychology from the Rhine Center at Duke. She is a state-certified teacher, researcher, author of many books, to include Great Moments of Modern Mediumship, Volumes 1 and 2, What the Great Mediums Have Taught Us About Spiritual Healing, Spirit Guides and Mediumship, and What is Spiritualism, and Grounds in Your Coffee, as well as a psychic medium skilled in precognition. So let's get her on the line now. Hi.
Karen,
hi, Maxine. How are you?
I'm fine.
How you doing?
Karen, nice
good.
To be here. Yeah.
Nice for you to join all the truth seekers from across the globe. And so what I'd like to know first off is how you got involved in all of this. You know, it's not everybody that writes books about mediumship and spiritual healing. So can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got involved in this?
Sure. As a teenager, I was growing up in Florida, and luck would have it, in the town or near the town where I went to high school and college in Florida, there were these spiritualist churches that were started by old Camp Chesterfield mediums who would come down to Florida in the wintertime. And being a young pup, teenager, you know, in my own car, you know, getting away from the home on a Sunday and going church shopping, I would be drawn to these spiritualist churches because, you know, when you're young and 18, you want to know what's, you know, where Mr. Right is. And I would go into these spiritualist churches and I would just feel at home. These people were talking my language. They were doing billet readings. They were welcoming me. They had coffee and cake after the service. They would give messages. I thought, man, I've never been in a church like this. And sure enough, I started to go to spiritualist churches, and I even took a few classes during college. But, you know, I graduated and went into the Army, and life got in the way and got married and da-da-da. And then it just, life happened. And then as my kids were getting older, you know, and I had more time to myself as a mommy, I would take them to a summer camp in Pennsylvania. And I thought, well, I need to go somewhere for 4 weeks while they're in summer camp. And I discovered Lilydale, which is a spiritualist camp in Western New York. And they were a place that was full of spiritualists and mediums. And I thought, wow, that's great. You know, it's like mommy camp. So, and then slowly I went elsewhere for classes. I've traveled all around the world. I've gone to Australia. I've gone to England. I've gone to Norway. Gone to, hope to go to Switzerland soon because of all the friends that I have made in spiritualism. So the journey has taken my whole life, but I never really left it, and it never really left me.
That's really nice. They say once you start on this path, you can't really turn back. You know, I mean, because you're
no.
so gravitated towards it. That's what I mean. You can turn back. It's free will. But
no.
you're just, right when
yeah.
you say that, you're just gravitated towards it so much.
And your whole outlook on life changes. You know, yes, I have friends who are Buddhist. I have friends of Christian denominations. And I'm able to go into their places of worship. And I really respect them and share with them. But my whole outlook on the afterlife is
mm-hmm.
is so focused now. You know, it's like I have my beliefs, and I'm very peaceful in it.
That's wonderful. So we're going to talk a little bit about the things in your book, and I just have some key words to bring up, and then you know you can run with the ball however you want. But I guess some of our guests. Can you explain to them what is mediumship? Because you have that in the book. What is mediumship?
Sure. First of all, I'm a very humble person. Let's get this out of the way. This is a chat between friends. I mean, I'm not interested in selling. I mean, you want to buy the book, that's fine. You know, go look on Amazon. All my books are there. But this is not a sales pitch.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is telling you about my story. And
right.
as I was coming to a understanding myself of what is mediumship? Why is it? What's the purpose of it? I mean, and what's the role of our soul, and how does this fit into the bigger cosmology of the universe? You know, as I was trying to wrestle with these questions, I would read book after book after book, and I would normally order these books on eBay. You know,
mm-hmm.
they're pretty cheap on eBay.
Mm-hmm.
Or, hey, this is a hot tip, and I didn't tell you this even before the show. Any book that's ever written is on. Get a piece of paper and a pencil. Write this down. www.bookfinder.com. And if you put in the name of the book, put in the name of the author, put in the name of the medium, put in the name of the whatever, you'll get all of the books that are from eBay, from Biblio, from Olibris, from all of the booksellers online. So it's the mother of all booksellers. And as I was wrestling with these questions, I'm a reader. I would get these books. I would read them. I would read them with one hand, and in the other hand, I would have a highlighter or a pen. And when I'd come across a story that was really cool, I hadn't heard of before, I'd circle it, I'd tag the page, I'd write in the margin, I'd say, man, I have to remember this story. Someday it's going to be useful. And then for all of these books that I've read, I mean, they were full of my scribbles and everything. And
mm-hmm.
so I took all of the stories of the old mediums, and I started to compile them. And I thought, that's a cool story. That's a cool story. That's a cool story. And I didn't forget what book it came out of. And I didn't forget what page I found it on. And a good thing about my books is that they are referenced. So if you like a cool story, I'll tell you where I found it, so you can go back to that book and read it yourself and do a deep dive. So,
okay, that's good.
What is mediumship? Well, my opinion.
Okay.
I respect other people's opinions, but my opinion, excuse me, is that it has intelligence behind it. Okay, and the reason I say this not just communication from the spirit world, okay? It's intelligent, self-aware communication from the spirit world, because
okay.
there are a lot of phenomena that people confuse with mediumship, but it's not. And there are some phenomena that could be mediumship or not mediumship.
Uh-huh.
For example, table tipping.
Okay.
For example, table tipping. It's very easy to intentionally fake table tipping. Or it's very easy to subconsciously, through what is called the Faraday effect, a bunch of people move the table around through their psychic energy. Okay? But that's not intelligent communication from the spirit world. In my books, there's a chapter and some stories on table tipping where it is mediumship, because the spirit world not only tapped out through table tipping a coded message, but they tapped out a coded message backwards.
They tapped it out backwards?
They tapped it out backwards. And both of us have my books open in front of them, in front of us, and I'm scrolling down to... Okay. The medium is Mary Marshall, and what was, you could look it up, but what was tapped out was a series of letters, YRNEHKCOCFFEJ, but backwards it spells Jeff Cockerell. So here's a situation where table tipping might be confused with psychic energy, with just a bunch of random movements and unintelligent communication. But in my book, Great Moments of Modern Mediumship, Volume 2, and you could tell me what page it's on, the message that was given was this, and it was backwards. That's intelligence. It doesn't have to be backwards to be intelligent. Another example was through a famous American medium called Eileen Garrett.
Yeah, Eileen Garrett. She was tested a lot, too.
Excellent. And she, through her table tipping, there was an address that was given through table tipping. And no one at the table knew this address. So that's what I mean by intelligent communication with the spirit world. You and I can get a table to tip, but can we get the table to tip an exact address that neither one of us knows?
Well, that would be
that
true.
Would be,
that would verify things
that
from
would
the spirit
be.
People.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Because, right, like my teachers always taught me that when you know you have a link, it's an intelligent link, and you're talking intelligently to the spirit people in the spirit world.
Right. Right. And your guest next week, I have to give a big shout out to him, because he was one of my tutors at the Ryan Center at Duke. And he is very knowledgeable with the phenomena of parapsychology. And when is it mediumship and when is it not mediumship? And his name is Lloyd Erebach. And there can be, I hate to steal his thunder, but next week he'll probably talk about PK or telekinesis or
telekinesis. Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff. That doesn't have to be mediumship, you know. That could just be, you know. Let's get back to mediumship. So my book, I referenced every story,
you
and
did.
I not only put at the end where I got all of this information and what page of the book I got it from. I have an extensive use of footnotes.
Yes, and, you do.
And I just am a stickler for little bits of information. And, you know, if you're reading a story and da-da-da, and, oh, you know, there was some information that I wanted to include here. I couldn't stick it in the story. I put it in the footnotes, so at the bottom of the page, you can, you can really do a deep dive, and you can really learn and be inspired.
And there was something, I couldn't find it right away, so I'm going to ask you right off the top here. Remember, there, you had in the book something about the greatest seance? There, it was the greatest seance?
Yes.
Yes. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
William Cuthouser, a relatively unknown medium in the 60s and 70s, American. Here on the West Coast, or here on the East Coast, New York. You know, I mean, what they did is they brought him into the RCA recording studio in New York City. And they had a seance in a recording studio. And you, if you can imagine this sound room, and if you've been associated with music, you know that they don't have just one microphone. They have microphones spread all over the room, you know, to get the drummer, to get the singer, but also, you know, other maybe hanging microphones. Back in the day, they did this. And so he had this. He was a direct voice. He had a lot of phenomena associated with him. But he had this seance in a recording studio in full light, and as the direct voices would come out and be manifested, the sound engineers who were in the sound booth with their headphones on, you know, and their display panel, they were able to say, you know, that sound is coming from close area of this microphone that's hanging on the opposite side of the room as the medium. And they recorded, and during the seance, you could hear the sound engineer saying, oh yes, that's coming from microphone 5. Okay. Another voice would come, microphone 2. And the not the microphone that was next to the medium. So that's called the greatest seance. Full light, just one person in a sound booth. Can you imagine a medium, you know, loving the spirit world and loving what they do to do that today?
It's wonderful. I mean, it's incredible, right? It's incredible.
Yeah. Right, right.
So I guess we're doing a journey down your book. So then you talk about, then you have the reader and you talk about apps and healing. So you want to talk a little bit about that for us?
Sure.
Thank you.
Now, absentee healing. Is not confused, or not to be confused with distant healing. If I touch you, that would be contact spiritual healing.
Right.
Okay? And there are reasons why spiritual healers don't touch. You know, maybe the patient doesn't want to be touched. Maybe they're in an oxygen tent. They can't be touched. Maybe they have some skin diseases where they can't be touched. So an absent healing is where the patient is not touched by the spiritual healer. And you don't have to touch. You know, therapeutic touch is a modality. Reiki is a modality. But in spiritual healing, we know that you don't have to touch to get that healing.
No,
and many spiritual healers did both contact and absent healing. Oh, Ted Fricker, one of my favorite healers. He and George Chapman are relatively unknown, but they were spiritual healers in the UK in the 1970s. And you write it down. You could still get their books on Amazon, on eBay, on bookfinder.com. But Ted Fricker, there were two instances of absent healing that are just mind-blowing, in my opinion. Ted Fricker worked with a spirit world entity, a spirit guide, if you will, that he named Sambo. And Sambo was visualized to him as a 7-foot black man, you know, a former mm-hmm. slave, and yeah. da-da-da. He would appear clairvoyantly, and he was not known outside of Ted Fricker's family. You know, even Harry Edwards, he didn't talk about his spirit guides. And so this was before the book about Ted Fricker was printed. And someone came to Ted Fricker and said, look, I have a relative in America that's sick. And Ted Fricker said, no problem. On a certain time, I'll send spiritual healing, da-da-da, no issues. And so that person went away and contacted their person in America and said, okay, on such and such date, you know. And next thing you know, this was before email, before letters, urgent mm-hmm. telegram came to this woman in the UK saying, stop the healing. There's a 7-foot black man saying, I'll heal you, ma'am. Don't worry about it. And she clairvoyantly saw Sambo and faded. Needless to say, she was healed. She told her relative in the UK through an urgent telegram that she was healed, stopped the healing. And Ted Fricker is known by this. Now, this great moment I have in my book under two categories. Number one, absent healing. And number two, verification of spirit guides. Because here we have an independent person who knows nothing about Ted Fricker, knows nothing right. about Sambo, but was able, probably, you know, was not clairvoyant, but got this image and it was verified. Another story about absent healing by Ted Fricker, someone came to him for healing. He said, okay, no problem. Now Ted Fricker had a healing room, and his favorite flower was carnations. And in England, everybody has a garden. And he would take carnations from his garden and put them in his private healing room when he did healing. Okay, so the woman who wanted healing knew nothing about the carnations. And she, after seeing Ted Fricker and requesting healing, she went home to prepare for a party she was hosting at home. And she went home and she says she went up, you know, to get dressed and put on her makeup, and she told her husband to keep answering the door and welcome the guests into her home. And all the guests that came to her home, as soon as they came into the house, they said to the woman's husband, oh, carnations, oh. And the husband's like, what? We don't have any carnations in the house. But come on in, you know, have a drink. You know, the party's getting started, da-da-da, or the dinner party, da-da-da. And so guest after guest after guest would come in and say, one after the other, each not knowing the other, saying, wonderful, where's the carnations? And she would come down. She finally came down, and all her guests were saying, where's the carnations? She said, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't have carnations. I'm feeling really good because I went for spiritual healing. And then she went back to Ted Fricker, who told her that, yes, at that moment, at about the time that she was having the dinner party, was the time that he sent absent healing to her. Now, isn't that fabulous?
That is, and so they smelled the carnations, right?
Yes. Yes.
That is. And Chapman, I don't really know too much about Chapman.
George Chapman was, I believe, a fireman.
Okay.
And, you know, you don't have to be a professional healer. You just have to love to serve people.
Right.
And he eventually, let me pull up.
And don't you think with healing and you have to develop a sort of like a little bit of a rapport with the spirit world too as well?
He also worked with a well-known spirit guide. And again, he didn't make a big deal of it, but if somebody Googles and can call into the show, or I'll Google it right now. I believe the name of his book is Surgeon from the Dead or something like that.
Okay.
And it's another case where there are two, great moments here, because his spirit guide, his healing doctor, whatever you want to name it, the person in the spirit world, he was a trance healer. And he went into trance, and he did it often enough to become familiar with his healing counterpart in the spirit world. And he got a name. He got the name of the hospital where this doctor had worked, and it was all verified that a recently deceased doctor, physician in the UK was working with George Chapman from the spirit world. And so now you don't need to know a lot of healers don't know who they work with on the other side, but in this case it was verified, and it was Dr. Lang was the name of the guy. In fact, George Chapman got Dr. Lang's daughter, who was still living in her 60s, and George Chapman would go into trance and talk to his daughter. George Chapman would go into trance, and Dr. Lang would talk to his daughter, and his daughter was convinced that George Chapman was working with Dr. Lang.
I'm just sitting here. No, it's amazing because that happens, you know? And some spirit guides do make known who they are to the people they're working with, just for a verification purpose. Not that you need it, but you know what I'm saying? Sometimes they do.
And there are two books that are written on George Chapman, Surgeon from Another World, written in 1978, and Healing Hands. So if somebody wants to do a deeper dive on this, you know, I've just scratched the surface.
Well, you seem to scratch the surface on a lot of things, though, to make people aware of things you have with these books.
Well, you know, Karen, and I know your book is about the same way. I give bite-sized stories.
Yes.
And in your blog and in your book, you give bite-sized stories.
I do.
Someone may not like a certain subject. Someone may be resonated toward a certain medium or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And they're able to do a deeper dive by the references that we give. And this is also important because so many people have no idea of the heritage that we have, or they give the information wrong. And so it's out there. It's out there.
It's out there. You just, you have to search for it. But I just wanted to search the whole time for me. Once I got into mediumship and spiritualism, I just had this need to keep searching and finding things. You know.
And another thing I put in my book, and I'm not just blowing my own horn, is I found all these quotes, you know, that either the great mediums would say or somebody would say, and I thought, you know, it was some of these aha moments or whatever. And I thought these quotes were great, but I can't make a book of just quotes.
Well,
so,
yeah, but you go ahead. I'm sorry.
In front of every chapter, you know, I have these quotes. So you could say, you know, gosh, you know, Harry Edwards, one of the greatest healers that ever lived, said, you know, the greatest form of mediumship is healing.
He's right.
And other Ina Twigg, she was the UK's first TV medium, and she isn't like a TV medium like they have them now. I mean, she was old school spiritualist, went to church every day, you know, and she said, you know, we must take. Back in the 60s, when she was first on TV, she said, we must take mediumship off the pedestal. Because even back then, they were putting mediums on pedestals and da-da-da. And if she would see what they did today or the pedestals today, you know, she'd probably have a heart attack. But, that you know, she said, you know, the greatest thing about a mediumship sitting is to send, you know, the sitter away with joy and hope.
Right. Yeah, that's what it is.
You know? And that's what it is.
It is.
That's what it is.
Since we're talking about, you know, absent healing, I'd like to talk a little bit about spiritual healing, if you don't mind, since we're on the healing modality here. And I'd like to talk about the person I just did the blog on, William.
William Lilly.
Could you talk about him a little bit?
When I first heard the story about William Lilly, my jaw dropped, and I had to go out and investigate this. You know, William Lilly was born in a family of spiritualists in the 1920s. You know, that was one of the heydays. And his mother would bring the pram into the weekly circle. So he had this from the time he was a babe. And there was no pressure on him to become a spiritual healer. This is, you know, I mean, spiritualism and the way of life was ingrained on him. And let me give you a backstory just to build this guy up.
Okay.
Because another fun fact about him is in the height of World War One, or in the height of World War Two, when England was mobilized, every able man was in the force, You know, they didn't know if Hitler was going to invade the British Isles. William Lilly got an exemption to the draft because he was a spiritual healer. He went in front of what would be known as the draft board with all his papers and to say, I see these many patients a week and da-da-da, and these are my qualifications. And can you imagine the government bureaucracy? Look, I mean, they knew about spiritualism back then, but you want a what? You want an exemption of the draft because you heal people and you're not a medical doctor? Sure enough, he was given an exemption. And that he was a spiritual healer back then. And then after World War II, he moved to South Africa. Now, this is where it really gets jaw-dropping. He continued his spiritual healing in South Africa. Black, white, colored, public, private, hundreds of people. He would do healing demonstrations. They'd come up to the stage, da-da-da. Sure enough, in one of these mass public healings, there was a boy that was brought forward. And his upper arm, his humerus, the bone from the shoulder to the elbow, was visibly disformed. Daylight with hundreds of witnesses. He was put on a table or on a chair. The crowd that was very tight, you know, all saw this. William Lilly was a trance healer. And he operated from a trance condition, a trance state. And his trance doctor entranced him. He ran William Lilly's finger across this boy's arm, and the flesh opened up without a knife. The witnesses said that half the front row fainted right there on the spot. But William Lilly and his spirit doctor weren't done yet. Hundreds of witnesses. He removed, very gently, the diseased bone, put it aside, and then with ectoplasm, sealed up the wound, and the boy walked off, healed. The story doesn't end there. William Lilly gets a knock at the door. The police arrest him for practicing medicine without a license. They're serious. They throw him in jail. The prosecutor drags the boy's parents and the boy in front of the judge. The prosecutor in front of the judge takes the diseased bone. It is all over the newspapers in Cape Town. He waves this bloody bone, the prosecutor, and wants to put William Lilly in jail for healing. I'm not sure if the judge dismisses the case or throws it out, finds him not guilty. But William Lilly goes on to be an accomplished spiritual healer in South Africa. And his son, David Lilly, I had the pleasure of emailing him just to verify the story. I had seen the newspaper reports. Mm-hmm. I had seen the reports in books. It was in the Cape Town News. It was in the Psychic News. Da-da. David Lilly, William Lilly's son, is a healer and an author. And he still has the bone.
The son still has the bone, correct?
Yeah, yeah. Mm. I mean, not to be macabre or grotesque
or
collecting bones, but there's no magic, there's no properties about this bone, except it's an artifact of one of the greatest moments of spiritual healing. We're talking about... Mm-hmm. We're talking about Jesus and the leper, you know, quality of healing, you know, and so many witnesses. Isn't that fabulous?
That is. It's fabulous. So we're going to keep on this talk on this topic a minute. And now we're going to talk about Jack Kelly and the Healing Temple at Lilydale. And I know you have a story in your book about that as well. And I'd like you to share that with everybody out there around the world.
Well, there's something I didn't learn until a couple of months ago. The Healing Temple at Lilydale, and if you're not familiar with Lilydale, that's okay. Don't turn off the radio. Is well known for spiritual healing, but it was built in 1955. It had not always been there, and before it was built, the place that the Healing Temple is built at Lilydale was the spot where a famous Native American and opera singer, by the way, at Lilydale had his healing temple, or had his healing teepee. So next, if you don't go to Lilydale, if you don't know what I'm talking about, you know, just think of the teepee next time. But anyway, Jack Kelly was an American healer in the 1940s, 50s. And these were the days where you could walk up to somebody and diagnose and prescribe, you know, without, you know, fear of litigation or legal action. But he was very famous at diagnosing and at the auditorium at Lilydale, there was someone who did not make his lecture at the auditorium and just came just as they were filing out of the auditorium. And Jack Kelly saw this person. He said, "I know you're late. I know you missed the lecture, but your wife will be healed when you go back home." He didn't know anything about him, didn't know his name, just blurted that out.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Healing Temple Lilydale owes to a famous healer called Jack Kelly.
And yeah, there's a picture of him in front of the Healing Temple, isn't there? Of Jack Kelly.
Yes, with Jack Kelly and Mae West.
Yeah, Mae West, because Jack Kelly was Mae West's medium.
Yes, yes.
So that's pretty interesting.
That is pretty interesting.
And so now we're on the subject of Lilydale and Lilydale, but I want to talk about precipitative paintings, because Lilydale at the Maplewood Hotel has a number of precipitative paintings, and so does Camp Chesterfield. And so I want you to give us your take on precipitative paintings.
Well, there's also one in the Lilydale Library. There's two of them, three of them at the Maplewood. There's at least two or three in the museum. So, you know, now precipitated paintings, we talked about this before the show.
Right.
You know, I'm a down-to-earth, you know, you kind of have to convince me kind of person. You know, I am not a woo-woo kind of person. And I had heard of precipitative paintings, and I hadn't given it much thought, you know. Daguerre, there was a famous precipitative artist in Scotland called Daniel Daguerre, I believe. And he did these miniatures, and there are, I think there are a few at the Arthur Fiddley College Museum. And I had known about him, but I didn't give him much interest. And I was kind of poo-pooing the whole idea, basically, because I thought maybe, you know, yeah, there might be a case, one or two, that's legitimate, but it could be easily fraudulent, you know. And I didn't give it much legitimacy until Ann Harrison, my editor at Saturday Night Press Publications, and you can Google that. There's a whole story about Ann Harrison being the daughter-in-law of Minnie Harrison that I write about in the book quite a bit, but I digress. Perhaps we could get to it. But precipitated paintings, I went back, and the Catholic Church has big-time research on this. Big time. They have several saints. They have documented cases. They have, I mean, it is a big thing with some saints that the Catholic Church recognizes. But in American spiritualism, the Bain sisters and the Campbell brothers were known for their precipitated paintings. Now, here's what really convinced me. There are a few things that really convinced me. Number one, people would go to the Bain sisters with their own canvas, and they would sign and date before they went, you know, the back of their canvas, you know, went to the Bain sisters, April 1889, you know, da-da-da. And then they would give the canvas to the Bain sisters. Now, they can't swap out something that's already been scribbled on. You know, that was a good lead-in to convincing me. Number one. Number two, the precipitation happened before their eyes. Not like cover it up with a cloth and uncover it. No, it would happen before their eyes. Okay, I'm still trying to get my head around that one. But what really convinced me that, aha, there's no way it would be faked kind of thing, there's a couple of stories in Volume 2 where someone's, a man brought this canvas in, and it had a picture of him and his deceased wife. Isn't that great, you know? Him, a likeness of him right there, boom, and a likeness, boom, of the deceased wife. And then the man looked at it and said, oh, I didn't tell you I had two daughters in the spirit world too. And the Bang sisters said, okay, hold on. And sure enough, the two daughters appeared as well. And there was also a case where there were things on the painting that were added by the spirit world after the person took the painting home, whether it be a necklace, whether it be someone else. And so I'm thinking, you know, that can't be faked. There's no way.
No, and some they say they'll change, right? Maxine, yes. They say that sometimes the painting will change.
Mm-hmm.
And there's proof right there that you just said that.
Right, right. So. That's great moments.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I mean, that's fabulous moments. I mean, that's, you know.
And how do you feel about apports?
You know, apports, your guest next week can talk about them being not mediumship.
Okay.
But they can be. You know, if the spirit world, and I'm not going to name names, but there's a so-called medium out there that produces apports from their mouth. Okay. But these apports that this current so-called medium produces are just colored glass or semi-precious stones. Okay? If apports are intelligent communication, if you are in a seance and the direct voice says there is going to be an apport coming through the trumpet, and you see the trumpet or you can tell the trumpet is floating around, and then you hear a rattling inside the trumpet, and sure enough, it falls out. And what falls out is a ring that belonged to somebody in the spirit world. Okay, that's intelligent. You know, the direct voice said it was coming.
Yes, it is.
You know, it's an apport that is recognized and taken, and not just a frivolous gemstone. You could have regurgitated and say you apported it from your mouth. But my opinion aside, my research and my books show intelligent apports, things that were in the coffin of the deceased.
Now, when the apports came, go ahead, I'm sorry. I'm going to say, when the apports came into a seance, did some of the sitters recognize the apport? Do you understand what I mean? From somebody from the spirit world?
Yes. Or they could be specially requested. Estelle
okay.
Roberts, one of the
yes.
greatest mediums,
she
wrote
was.
A book called 40 Years a Medium. And she mm-hmm. wrote a book called 50 Years a Medium. You could do a whole show on Estelle Roberts.
Yeah.
Okay. She was in a seance and someone got, I mean, it wasn't cheeky, but they said, can I have an apport from ancient Egypt? Sure enough, you know, a scarab, a little blue beetle, not an actual insect, but a inscribed stone was apported on demand. There was a ring that was apported inside the sitter's cupped hands.
Yeah,
the sitter
I read that.
Was,
it was in
asked
the book.
To cup
mm-hmm.
their hands, and sure enough, they felt it was warm. They felt something going on in there. They said, just okay, keep it cupped. And when they uncupped their hands, there was a ring inside. So now getting to Minnie Harrison.
Okay.
The mother-in-law of Annie Harrison. Minnie Harrison was not a professional medium. She just had a home circle for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And many of the instances in my books came from non-professional people that just had a book about written about them.
Mm-hmm.
And Minnie Harrison would not only have apports, but things would they would be asported. They would leave the seance room and be transported elsewhere. They did that for food during World War II for the prisoners of war, if you can believe that, or gifts for the spirit children. But Minnie Harrison, M-I-N-N-I-E Harrison, look that up on YouTube and you will see her son showing
Tom Harrison?
Apports. And
would that be Tom Harrison, her son? Yes.
That would be Tom Harrison.
Yes.
And he wrote a book, and there's a wealth of information he put on YouTube free.
I'll look at that.
Now, can I mention someone near and dear to my heart? I'm motivated to and inspired to talk about.
Sure.
Lillian Bailey.
Okay.
Lillian Bailey was a medium from the 1920s to the 1950s. I think she passed in the 1960s. She is well known in the UK. She traveled the length and breadth of the UK after World War I and during World War II, selflessly giving readings. And well-known fact, corroborated by multiple sources within the royal palace. During the 1940s, there would be particular sitters that didn't want to come to her but would send a private car. And she said, no problem. You know, I don't even think she charged extra, you know, go wherever the need is. So the car was sent, and it was kind of like a London taxi back in the day, but it was kind of like blacked out. And she got in it, and she couldn't see where they were going. And this car stopped, and they said, "I'm sorry, madam, we have to blindfold you to get you out of the car." "No problem." And so they blindfolded her, and they let her out, and they let her into a building. While still in a blindfold, they sat her down in a chair. She gave a trance sitting, and she can't remember, you know, who, what she said. And, you know, blindfold was removed. And Elizabeth, the Queen of England, the Queen Mother, Mary, her Elizabeth's mother, and the royal family were all there. And she was like, you know, and she didn't write about this. She didn't say anything about this until much later. And what really confirmed this, you know, are later on in the 1960s and 1970s, the palace people leaked the story, you know. And it was corroborated. Only after it was leaked did Lillian Bailey say yes. Lillian Bailey then produced a brooch that had the royal seal on the back. And they said they didn't pay me. They just gave this to me for all my service to them. And that was confirmed. Now, you can't go to a pawn shop, you know, in London and get something with the royal seal, you know. But
yes,
Lillian Bailey is also in my books because she gave trance sittings, which, again, is a whole show in itself.
It is.
But she had a couple of spirit people that she became very familiar with. And after World War One, she went for a spirit photograph, and she went to William Hope, the premier spirit photographer at the time, trying to get her mother in the back of the, sit down in front, take your picture, and the spirit extra might show in the photograph. And instead of her mother, there were these two people she didn't recognize, a little girl and a man in a World War One military outfit. It's like, well, I served in the war, but I didn't, you know, I didn't know anybody, and, you know, who passed. And she came to know that one. And of course, she looked him up. Of course, he was an officer, a captain in a such and such unit, died. A gunshot wound through the forehead, and in the spirit photograph there was a scar above his eye. And William Wooten even said, "Tell my mother I'm okay. Tell my mother I'm okay." And Lillian Bailey said, "You know, fine, give me the address." Sure enough, she got the address. She mailed William Wooten's mother. She said, "You know, I'm a medium, and your mother and your son says he's okay. And by the way, he's working with me." I mean, something bizarre like that.
Yeah.
Well, she got Lillian Bailey got a letter back from this woman and said, "You know, my son was an officer and a gentleman, and he didn't do anything with spiritualism, and I don't know what you're talking about." But still, to have that kind of, you know, it doesn't matter what the mother thinks, you know. If someone passes and still wants to serve, you know, isn't that great? That this, and you don't have to be Silver Birch or a big, you know, advanced person to work with someone. You could be a doctor and work with George Chapman. You could be a dead soldier and work with Lillian Bailey. And isn't that a sacred, beautiful relationship that we have with the spirit world?
Yes,
you know?
It is. Yes.
And so there were great mediums that were very dedicated to what they did too, I have to say.
Yeah.
What do you think? I see in the book you talk about automatic writing. Is there a difference between automatic writing and inspirational writing?
It's on the spectrum of trance. Automatic writing would be, I believe, a deeper form of trance. And inspired writing would be a lighter form of trance. Like inspirational speaking is a light form of trance, whereas, you know, a deep trance where you don't, you know, remember what you say and you might be unconscious, that's still trance speaking. So there's a spectrum of the trance state, and whether you're speaking, whether you're writing, whether you're healing, all of these can be done through the trance state, either lightly or deeply.
Okay, thank you. And so why don't we talk about materialization, and what are your thoughts on that, and maybe some of the great mediums that did full materialization?
Well, you have to look at Alec Harris. You have to look at Alec Harris, A L E C Harris, and his books. I believe Walking Among the Dead, and there's another one about him, can be found on bookfinder.com. The Saturday Night Press might be reprinting that. But Alec Harris was a deep trance materialization medium. There's some cases where materialization can occur when the medium is not so deep, but Alec Harris would go out like a light, you know, and the materialization forms. Now, people argue about this all the time, and the truth be told, we really don't know the depth and we don't know the width and the depth of materialization. So people say, oh, you got to have ectoplasm, it's got to be in the dark, da 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 da. I said, no. You know, there are cases where it's been in the light, you know, and there are cases where it's not even ectoplasm at all. So here's where people kind of say the wrong thing or say something that's misinformed. But Alec Harris, in the dark with ectoplasm, and with his ectoplasm, and ectoplasm does not just come from the medium. It comes from all the sitters. It comes from the objects in the room. The spirit world has told us this. And in one case in my book, ectoplasm did form also from a cat that was in the room. So the ectoplasm also came from the cat. So to say we know everything about ectoplasm is just ludicrous. It's very complex. But Alec Harris, through the ectoplasm that his body would produce and would be produced from the sitters, everyone else in the room, would form and build up, and the spirit world would use this ectoplasm to rematerialize their physical body momentarily. It wouldn't last a minute, 10 minutes, an hour maybe, and then it would dematerialize, and the ectoplasm would be dematerialized and go back into the where it came from. Okay, so in Alec Harris's materialization seances, the forms were so solid, they not only walked and talked, they asked sometimes, come and take my pulse. And the materialized form would have their pulse taken. And then the materialized form would say, hit me in the chest, in the materialized chest. Bam, you know, there. Can you believe now it's full? Can you believe now it's materialized. Can you believe now that I'm back in the flesh? And at the end of the seance, the forms would dematerialize. So materialization, there's a lot we don't know about it. In Helen Duncan's case, one of her spirit guides materialized a little girl. She would eat sweets and eat half a banana while materialized. And I also have to talk about Albert Best.
Yeah, Albert Best,
can look
the postman.
The postman. But did you know he went down to South Africa for a tour or something? He was met at the train station or during his travels by somebody he didn't know and said, the chief wants to see you tomorrow. It's like, I don't know, this wasn't on my tour. I don't know it. But he went with it. Day. Mm-hmm. And it was an indigenous tribe of South Africa. The next day, somebody picked up Albert Best, took him out to a remote site. And there in front of a campfire was a medicine man and who had a fire going. And from the fire, Albert Best's dead wife and child materialized, rose from the flames, came out of the fire, and had a reunion with Albert Best. And then, instead of dematerializing, walked back into the fire and dematerialized. So the medicine man, whatever, was a fabulous physical medium.
Mm-hmm.
And that's in the book, Best of Both Worlds. So I'm not making these stories up. You know, I'm read
sure
them somewhere.
Not.
Yeah, but I want people to understand that these stories came from somewhere and they were written down by somebody.
You want to talk a little bit about spirit lights, because I noticed you talk about them a little bit in your book as well.
Again, this is a perfect example about intelligent communication.
Okay.
Is it mediumship? Is it really the spirit world? Or is it somebody's psychic energy? Is it PK? You know, is it static electricity? A thousand other, you know, fraud, a thousand other explanations. Is it intelligent? Do they move? Do the spirit lights move and behave in an intelligent manner? I'm not sure if it's Arthur Conan Doyle or someone else of that era. Had a spirit light land on their mustache, floating around the room and then coming to their mustache. That's not random.
No.
And another case of it being intelligent is the spirit light in a seance. Someone dropped their handkerchief or misplaced it or dropped it, whatever. And the spirit light came in the dark over to the point above the handkerchief. And the direct voice also had a phenomenon at the same time, said, I will show you where your handkerchief is, darling. That's intelligent control. That
is,
you know,
intelligent communication.
Yes, yes. Not random, not chaotic, but with a purpose.
I found this very interesting. You talked a little bit about in the book about proxy sittings.
Yes. And we owe a great deal to the Society of Psychical Research, started in, I believe, 1886. all these great minds in Victorian England wanted to investigate mediumship, psychical phenomena, wanted to do it in a scientific controlled manner. These were mostly men of science, a few women there, but I have to say a woman, because the secretary, and back in the days the secretary was a woman, but the secretary to the Society of Psychical Research was sent to all these mediums. And the scientists at the SPR used to say, okay, go to this medium and say you're sitting for Mr. Jones. So a proxy sitting eliminates what we call today a cold reading.
Okay.
Okay? So Mr. Jones, if Mr. Jones were to go to a medium, or wherever, the medium might give them a fraudulent cold reading and just read their aura, And even back then, they were trying to get their head around where this information, the scientists were trying to get their heads around where this information that the mediums got, where it came from. So if Mr. Jones went to a medium and said, I want to talk to my dead wife. Okay. The scientists of the day, and even today, saying, well, somebody can read Mr. Jones's mind. Or back then they called it telepathy. Or today we say they're reading the aura of Mr. Jones. Okay. And so there are things about Mrs. Jones, who's dead, that Mr. Jones knows about. And are they getting that information through telepathy, or are they getting that information because Mrs. Jones is really here from the spirit world? Are you following me?
Yes.
So a proxy sitter eliminates that. So your name is Karen. And if I were to go to a medium and I'm saying, I'd like a reading for Karen. Okay, and I'm just going to write down the notes. Okay, I'm not even going to say yes or no, because I don't know who Karen's dead people are, but I'm going to take the notes down. And so the proxy sitter, the secretary for the SPR, would be sent to these mediums and say, I want a reading for Mr. Jones. Okay, and then all she would do is write down the reading. Now, this is the same thing that the Winbridge Institute is doing out in Arizona. It's called triple blind and quadruple blind testing of mediums. And if you're listening to the show and you don't know what the Winbridge Institute is, they don't certify mediums just to certify mediums. They are a research institute, and they produce academic papers. And there's a book, I'll look it up, Testing Mediums, I think it is. And it's on the scientific back end of how they test them, and they test them through proxy sitters. So in my research, I have contacted a lot of mediums, and I said, would you be willing to do a proxy sitting? And most of them go, what? They don't know what it is. Yeah. And then they say, no science. I don't want to do science, Oh, you're going to pay me, aren't you? And I said, no. If you're not going to pay me, I'm not going to do it. These proxy sittings, is a way to double blind, triple blind, quadruple blind, and test the medium. And to eliminate me as a medium getting stuff either cold reading or from the sitter's aura.
That is interesting. There's another thing I read. I read in the book, and I was surprised that John Edmonds had a mediumistic daughter, Laura Edmonds. I was really surprised when I read that.
She is purportedly the first trance medium in the United States. And there were a lot of women doing trance at that time, trance speaking. Cora Richmond, another woman who spoke for, you know, practically 24 hours. These were women of the Victorian era that really, in that aura, in that era, women were not seen in public. They were not, they'd give a speech? No, you know, but if they were overcome by spirits or if they were a trans speaker, they could be booked. Now, isn't that kind of ironic, you know?
Yes.
There were no women college, there were very few women college graduates and there were no public speakers and da-da-da. But if you go into trance, you know, then it's not you. Then we'll listen to whoever's talking through you. So, Judge Edmonds' daughter documented what was going on in New York, and he lost place on the New York Supreme Court because he became a spiritualist. Talk about, you know, think about, you know, the latest Supreme Court nomination, you know, and all these, you know, and rumors of you can't be a Catholic and be on that. Well, here is somebody who was on the Supreme Court who said, you know, that spiritualist stuff, you know, I'm going to embrace it. And they kicked him off.
I know.
Kicked him off the court.
But I didn't realize that about his daughter until I read it in your book.
Yeah.
That's what I mean. These books have a wealth of information. Is there anybody or anything else that you would like to talk about that we didn't talk about tonight?
If anybody has any questions, I'd like to go through the, or I have no problem speaking to anybody who's called in. However, I will say one thing, and I'm kind of like, there I was a teenager, going to these spiritualist churches, and I had heard this term called ectoplasmic rods, and the ectoplasmic rods is what supposedly, or how it was explained, lifts the table and table tipping. And there I was, a skeptical teenager, and I was like, yeah, right. Where'd they get this information? 40 years later, I'm researching in Ireland in the 1920s. There's a mechanical engineer who's investigating a medium called Kathleen Gallagher. And he's a mechanical engineer. And he's kind of wondering how this table is levitating with his mechanical engineering mind. And he gets the idea of putting the table on a scale and putting the medium on a scale. And sure enough, as the table levitates, the scale that has the medium gains weight. And when I read about this, I was like an aha moment. You know, how dumb could I have been as a teenager saying, poo-poo, ectoplasmic rods. Well, here was where the term came from. But I just didn't know it at the time. And so there was a force, there was a connection between the table and the medium, and as the table gained rose, the medium gained weight. So there was a connection through a, quote, ectoplasmic rod. Sometimes in science, we have to do these experiments, you know, and then to get to an understanding.
There is also something you talked about in a book about temperature changes, too.
Yes. Yes. And people kind of said, oh, well, if the spirit is here, the temperature will get colder. I'm like, yeah, right. Where do you get that information? Is that an old wives' tale? What? I mean, I'm not Missouri. I'm not from Missouri, but it's like, yeah, show me. Sure enough, they did temperatures, and in seances, if someone had a glass of water underneath their chair, the glass of water would freeze.
Yes,
it would get
there. It gets pretty cold.
Yeah. So.
Yes. So I think, like I said, I just don't know if you want to recap anything else before we close. I mean, there's just so much that you have brought out in these two books.
Well, I encourage anybody who's listening, do a deeper dive. You know, go to bookfinder.com, look up these books, order them, read them yourself. Read them yourself, you know, and do a deep dive on these subjects, and it'll be part of their journey. And isn't that wonderful?
It is. What do you think about Arnold Clare?
Wonderful medium.
Mm-hmm.
There's a book written about him.
There is. It just came out. It's going to come out in paperback.
Yeah, or it's been reprinted. Claire. C L A I R E. Arnold Clare. There's a famous story about him.
C L A R E. That's the book that Harry Edwards wrote.
Yes.
The Mediumship of Arnold Clare.
Yes. And, you know, these people are not famous. These people didn't charge these people didn't charge, you know, the equivalent of $800 back in the day. They did it because they loved the spirit world. They sat, they developed. They didn't make a big thing about it. They didn't commercialize it. And isn't that refreshing, you know?
Another one that left this earthly plane early was Jack Weber as well. He was very good too.
Yes, and he Harry Edwards, one of the most famous spiritual healers, gave over 10 million healings in his lifetime.
Yeah, he did.
Jack Weber was a very Jack Weber was his best friend, practically.
Yeah.
And he tried, through his spiritual healing, Harry Edwards tried to give him healing. And Jack Weber still passed on. And this really shook Harry Edwards. And Jack Weber died of a certain disease. I'm not sure if it was meningitis or something like that. But they knew what he died of. And it really knocked up Harry Edwards for a while. And then, lo and behold, a patient came to him, and Harry Edwards didn't know that he had meningitis or the same thing that killed his best friend. He gave this man a healing, and he became cured. So Harry Edwards humbly accepted, you know, he had always accepted that the healing wasn't from him, and
mm-hmm.
it wasn't his personal will. It was something outside of him, and you know, a higher power that he accepted. And Jack Weber also, I'm not sure if it was direct voice or materialization, but he communicated with his best friend, Harry Edwards, after he had passed.
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Yeah. Can you imagine, you know, the guilt or, you know, not being able to save your best friend?
Know.
You know, and then realizing, hey, this has nothing to do with me, you know, and I'm just the instrument.
Right. You know what? I think we do have a caller. Let's see what's going on.
Okay.
Hi, welcome to Truth Seekers. Can we have a first name, please?
Yeah, it's Alyssa.
Hi, how are you tonight?
Good, how are you?
Good, what can we help you with?
Are you guys doing readings?
Well, we could do a short one. We don't have too much time. What do you think, Maxine?
Yeah, what's your first name?
Alyssa.
Alyssa. And can you count to 20 for us?
Yes. Out loud?
Out loud. Yeah.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20.
Alyssa, I hate to ask questions, but this is a short little reading. But what I'm wanting to say is that there is a man from the spirit world who's touching in, and whether he's father, grandfather, I'm not sure. But
he's my grandfather.
Would,
I bet.
Would I forgot to tell you? Don't talk.
Oh,
let me do
sorry.
The talking. But I'm also and while I said that he's like, oh, forgive her. Because there's a lot of love between us, but I would say very quickly, and I'm impressed to say, Alyssa, you know, it's okay. You know, it's okay. I see a current situation, and I see loneliness. I see a big question mark above your head, and I'm just wanting to hold you in my hands and just to let you know from him it's okay. And we really don't have time for a longer reading, but this is not what the show was mainly about, but I really want you to say, I really want you to know that there's within your current situation, it's not a decision that needs to be made. It's not this or that. Just okay. Can you accept that?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
And
thank
I don't
you.
Know what Karen has for you.
Thank you. No,
okay.
That's okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, so we're going to wrap this up a little bit. I think we covered a lot of things tonight, and I'm happy having you and sharing your knowledge with all the truth seekers around the globe tonight. So I have one more question for you. Fired you.
Oh. You know, when I talk to people or when I read for people or there are a common theme that I see or what I've been trained to do or what I've picked up or what the spirit world lets me see is the arc of someone's life. And we come into this life, I believe, with a purpose or a plan. Doesn't mean we're going to do it, but, you know, the arc of our life may have that plan or it may just be our journey. And I am inspired the more I see people and I see the arc of their life and the things that they have overcome, or the things that have happened to them, or whatever. And I'm just inspired by almost everybody I meet in their life, and what a brave soul to have chosen to have been incarnated and come here. And nobody's life is a bed of roses. And on the arc of our life, you know, we have hardships, we have setbacks. Sometimes we have crashes and burns, you know, or unspeakably horrible things that I cannot even conceive happen to people every day. And so you have no idea. The person who's going to sit next to you on an airplane or the person you're listening to on the radio, you have no idea of the bravery of that soul to have come here and to have these things happened, and yet they survive, and yet they carry on. You know, Maya D'Angelo has a poem that says, "Yet I rise." You know, I'd be crushed into the dust of the earth, yet I rise. And so I'm inspired. Who inspires me? Everybody. Everybody's life story inspires me. There is something about everybody that inspires me.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure spending time with you tonight, and I'm sure all the truth seekers around the world have enjoyed what you had to tell us tonight and shared with us your knowledge on this subject.
Well, thank you for having me. And, you know, if I can be of any service, just let me know.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I would like to thank all the truth seekers around the world for listening tonight. And remember, until we meet again, may you be the light that helps others see.